Our gospel reading today is from the gospel according to Luke, the 13th chapter, the 12th chapter, beginning at the 13th verse. Listen for what God may be saying to the church today. Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But Jesus said to him, "Friend, who set me to be a judge or arbitrator over you?" And he said to the crowd, "Take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." Then he told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly, and he thought to himself, "What should I do? For I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods, and I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you. And the things you've prepared, whose will they be?' So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich toward God." Holy wisdom, holy word, thanks be to God. One's life does not consist of possessions. So what does one's life consist of? Here we're told that sometimes people store up treasures for themselves but are not rich toward God. What are the treasures and the actions that make us rich toward God? One of my treasures is a paint-by-number piece of art that my father painted. It shows a blue heron lifting off and taking flight from a large barren branch protruding out of the water. The sky is pale blue and gray, with clouds touched and illuminated by a brilliant yellow sun. There's one small spot where the paint has rubbed off, and you can see the number 24. That's the number of the color that was mapped to go in that spot. It's not high art, but I treasure it because of the story that goes with it. It's one of those childhood memories emblazoned into my mind of my father picking me up and putting me on his knee in the dining room, at the dining room table where he was painting. He let me hold the paintbrush. Although I was probably only 4 or 5 years old, I dipped it into the yellow paint. I'm sure his hand was supporting me, and I painted a little part of that yellow sun. "Be careful," he said. "Paint right here. Stay inside this line." He gave me permission to do a grown-up thing, to paint on his painting. And he held me, and he guided me and supported me through the whole process. I felt loved and so special. I treasure that painting, because I treasure that memory. If the painting is ever lost, I will still treasure that moment with my dad. I wonder, what are the things that you treasure? Are there objects that hold meaningful moments of your life? A favorite shirt that you wore when something significant happened? Do you have memories of a special summer? Or memories of laughter with children and grandchildren? Do you have an object that belonged to your grandmother? A photograph that reminds you of someone or of some special time? Do you treasure a gift that was handmade for you, or a gift that was so carefully selected that it showed you that you are known and valued and honored? The parable Jesus tells us invites us to consider our relationship to our possessions, to abundance, to wealth, to treasure. He asks us to think about the very nature of our lives. What is it that we treasure? What makes a meaningful life? The parable of the rich man does not imply that the man is wicked for having an abundant crop. He doesn't seem to be conniving or conspiring to shortchange others. The abundance doesn't seem to be the problem. But he does seem to be oddly isolated and completely focused on himself. He seems to be oblivious to his connections to those around him. Although his land produced abundantly, he makes no acknowledgement of the people working his land and harvesting his crops. He doesn't thank God for his blessing. He doesn't consider how his windfall might benefit his neighbors or his village. And he doesn't discuss the situation with others. He thinks only of his own well-being and has a conversation with himself about it. He then addresses his own soul. Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. He thinks that through his own efforts and possessions, he has secured his life for many years. One theologian has said that, quote, the farmer has fallen prey to worshiping the most popular of gods, the unholy trinity of me, myself, I. Although the farmer, the rich man, doesn't think of God, God addresses him. God is the one in control of all his days and the length of his life. It's shocking as a listener to hear of his imminent and sudden death. The parable brings to mind the uncertainty of human life, the frailty of human bodies, and the possibility of sudden loss. It's unsettling to hear Jesus tell this parable in which God tells a man that he will die tonight. The rich farmer was called a fool, not for having an abundance, but for how he planned and didn't plan to share it. It's implied that he did not have an answer to the question he was asked by God, the things you've prepared, whose will they be when you die? The farmer seems to treasure his possessions more than people in his life. God asks him essentially, who else are you thinking of? And we hear the unspoken answer, no one. So what does his life consist of? An abundance of possessions, collecting and saving, accruing and storing? But Jesus told us that an abundance of possessions does not make up a life. Although there are abundant things, enough to fill a barn, a new barn, a bigger barn, there is not an abundant life. So it is, Jesus said, with those who store up treasures for themselves but are not rich toward God. And we are left asking ourselves, what does it mean to be rich toward God? And what makes for an abundant life? After telling the parable to the crowd, Jesus turns to his disciples to explain further. These further verses are not included in the lectionary, but they're so important to the understanding of the story that we're going to listen to them now. We're picking up where the lectionary stopped, beginning at verse 22. Listen again. Jesus said to his disciples, Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear, for life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens. They neither sow nor reap, they have neither storehouse nor barn, and yet God feeds them. Of how much more value are you than the birds? And when and which of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to your span of life? If then you are not able to do so small a thing as that, why do you worry about the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, Even Solomon in all his glory was not clothed like one of these. Consider the lilies. People write poetry about that line, so evocative. Emily Dickinson once wrote in a letter to a friend that this was the only commandment that she never broke. That's impressive, because I'm pretty sure that I have broken this commandment many times. How about you? I forget to consider the lilies. I forget that I am embedded in God's good creation and that God is at work in my life all the time. It's a spiritual practice to remember, to intentionally refocus my mind on God's presence and God's infinite grace. Apparently, the disciples needed a reminder too. Jesus' teaching is now really getting into our human relationship with the world, our relationship with God's creation. We are part of it. We can learn from the lilies and the ravens and from their dependence on God. We too are dependent on God, but we so easily forget that. We humans carry an extra burden that the lilies and the ravens don't. We carry the idea that we are in charge. We worry and stress and have anxiety about our survival. The lilies don't do that. The ravens don't do it. Jesus asks, "How is worrying helping you?" It will not extend your life by even 1 hour. Now, this teaching is meant to be encouraging, but it's so easy for us to make it into one more thing that we can fail at. This could become one more thing that we, quote, should be doing. We should trust. We shouldn't worry. It might seem like we should be positive all the time. We should be happy all the time. We shouldn't have anxiety. We should do this. We shouldn't do that. But this teaching is not a task at which we can succeed or fail. This is a discipleship practice. And it's one that we will be imperfect at doing, and that's okay. When there are things that have us worried, maybe one thing that we can learn from the farmer's mistake is that we are not alone. Life is not only about us. We're part of a community, maybe even multiple communities. We can ask for help, and we can offer help. We can talk to other people and not just to me, myself, I. When there are things worrying you, when you are struggling with anxiety, there are so many things that you can do. You could arrange to see a Stephen minister. The Stephen ministers have received in-depth training on how to be good listeners and how to hold a confidential space. You could also talk to a counselor, a therapist, a consultant, a spiritual director, a financial advisor. You could ask for prayer with the deacons or for a meeting with one of your pastors. Your bulletins have information about how you can do a number of those things. There are so many things that you can do. And don't forget, you can talk to God too. God, I need your help, is always a wonderful prayer. Identify for yourself the truth of your experience, whether it is worry or fear or anger or whatever. Find your truth and speak it to God. Say it silently in your mind or say it out loud. Write it down in a journal or whisper it to the sky. God loves you and God is listening. You are not alone. We are not alone. Jesus' teaching is a word of encouragement. He's saying, don't be afraid. You're valued by God. Look around yourself and see that God is creating and sustaining life. When words of encouragement like this become discouraging because you think you're failing, look for ways to turn it around. Noticing that it's happening is the first step. You might just say, oops, I'm doing it again. Turning it around is step two. Turning it around could mean interrupting an anxiety or a fear with a thought of compassion and forgiveness for yourself, not covering it up with superficial happiness, but really feeling compassion and forgiveness for yourself. It's entirely human, and it is to be expected that we will sometimes worry. Remembering that is to have compassion for yourself. Telling yourself that it's okay to be human is a form of acceptance and forgiveness. What Jesus gives us here is a spiritual practice for reflection. It's an alternative, not an ultimatum. Consider the lilies rather than spin in anxiety. Consider the ravens rather than stress yourself out by striving for more of whatever it is you're striving for. See how God cares for them, Jesus says. God cares for you too, even more deeply. That's the encouragement. Remember this, you are a treasure to God. Discipleship is a process through which we grow and change and learn about God and learn about ourselves. We are trying to follow God in the way of Jesus. King Solomon is lifted up as a model for it for us. Jesus compares him to the lilies. Even Solomon, he said, in all his glory, is not clothed as one of these. If the lesson was only about clothing and beauty and possessions, Jesus might have lifted up any number of kings as examples, even Solomon's father, King David. But Solomon is famous for wisdom. And when he became king, he prayed to God, not for success, not for glory, not for riches, but for understanding. And in response to his prayer, God said, "Because you have asked this, and have not asked for yourself long life or riches or for the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern what is right. Because of this, I now do according to your word. Indeed, I give you a wise and discerning mind. No one like you has been before you, and no one like you shall arise after you. I give you also what you have not asked for, both riches and honor all your life. No other king shall compare with you." No other kings compared to Solomon, and yet, according to Jesus, still, the lilies and the ravens are clothed in glory greater than his. There are treasures all around us. And when we consider the lilies, when we remember the birds and how precious they are to God, when we trust that we too are precious, so much more valuable than the ravens, Jesus says, when we trust that, then we can shine in the lives of others. Then we can become treasures ourselves. Jesus ends this teaching with more words of assurance. He says, "Do not be afraid, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give alms. Make purses for yourselves that do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Make purses that do not wear out, containers for treasures that can't be stolen. One of my magic purses is a paint-by-number image of a majestic bird taking flight, and a memory is tucked inside that purse. Sometimes a paint-by-number painting is more precious than a Renoir, more valuable than a Monet. Life does not consist of possessions, Jesus says, but life consists of treasures. Treasures that cannot be stolen or eaten by moths. Treasures that reside where the heart is. Treasures that we create together and give to each other. Affirmation, support, laughter, kindness, tenderness, generosity, attentiveness, care. So find your treasure. Become a treasure. Honor your treasures. Consider the image of God deep inside your being. You are rich with God's glory. This is abundant life, whether it lasts for one more hour or one more day, one more year, one more decade, or until you are 105 years old. Remember what and who you treasure and why, and give thanks to God for them. For God is a God of abundant grace and steadfast love. Amen.